The following talk was presented on the 9th of April 2023 by spiritual leader Julian Harvey and is entitled, He Was Here a Minute Ago.
So, boy did I open a can of worms when I came up with this talk title. He was here a minute ago. I'm not sure where he's gone now, but he was here a minute ago. And if you read the blurb on Thursday night's email, which I sent out on Thursday, you'll see that I was talking about the multiple differences between the four Gospels on this particular event. And when I started looking at it, I thought, okay, I printed off a full copy of each of the Gospels relating from the resurrection point down. So I didn't go through the Last Supper. I didn't go through any of that sort of stuff. I didn't go through the last week. I just went to that moment in time when various people, and again, this is where some of the differences come in, various people turned up to find out that the physical representation of Jesus was not there. So I then went, okay, and then I looked at the chapters, some of the chapters after that, and there's some differences and there's some changes there. But when I started looking at just that chapter of the resurrection, the differences of the accounts are that's an over-exaggeration, I apologize. But there are some differences in there that you kind of go, okay, what is that, what's that all about? So if we go from the interpretation of the actual Bible, we look at the difference. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all wrote about the resurrection. Matthew, and so those of you that have done Bible study with Rhonda previously and are looking forward to doing Bible study with Rachel moving into this year, we'll find out that we use a book called Evolution of the Word, which documents when the actual books of the Bible were actually written based on some more advanced dating of the texts and of the material than we've had previously. And he wrote a book called, by Mr. Borg, I'm trying to think of his first name, but anyway, Borg's book, Evolution of the Word. So they've guesstimated that Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew was written somewhere between 85 and 90 of the Christian era. So somewhere in that period of time. So nearly 85 to 90 years after year one, which is classified as the year that Jesus was born, based on the fact that this whole period happened and his ministry started when he was about 30 and lasted for about 3 years, roughly. So Matthew was written somewhere between 85 and 90 years after Jesus was dead, after the crucifixion and after the resurrection. So in Matthew's account, there were two Marys that went to visit the tomb. There's no indication who the second Mary was in that particular version. The other thing that Matthew mentions that the others don't at all is that there was an earthquake, and it was the earthquake that moved the stone. And then when the earthquake finished, there was an angel who turned up, and the angel moved and rolled the stone away. The tomb was being guarded by several guards, and the guards all disappeared. They all took off because they were scared. And the angel message basically was, well, he was here a minute ago, and now he's not. So M1 and M2, that's what I'm calling them, head off to see the boys. That'd be the disciples. But then as they were going to visit the disciples, Jesus turns up. He then recounts to them that they need to get the gang of many. So M1 and M2 are told to get the team and go to Galilee, and he'll catch up with them in Galilee. So he was here a minute ago. He must have been in Galilee setting up the hotel rooms, making sure that the bookings are right. I don't know what he was doing. Anyway, that's my opinion only. Mark is the next gospel that we look at. Mark was written a little earlier. It was written between somewhere between 66 and 70 years after Jesus has moved on. And in Mark's version, he talks about M1. And we all know who M1 is. It's Mary Magdalene. And Mary, the mother of James. Now, when I first read Mary in the first one, the two Marys, I automatically assumed it was Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Jesus, but it wasn't. It was Mary, mother of James, and Salome. And I think Salome, somebody will have to correct me on this, but Salome was one of the handmaidens at the time. And they turned up to anoint the body. And when they got there, they saw the stone was already removed. There was nobody else around. So they walked up to the stone area, and there suddenly was a young man dressed in white who informed them, he was here a minute ago. He then told them, again, get the gang, go to Galilee. It's all set up. What's really interesting about the Gospel of Mark is there's two separate endings. There's one ending which is called the immediate ending. So obviously they wanted to get it over and done quickly. There's two sentences and an amen. That's it. The long ending, which is the other one, has 12 additional sentences and no amen. So let me move on to Luke. You can see my problem here, can't you, gang? We went on to Luke. And Luke was written about the same time, or roughly the same time as Matthew, so somewhere between 85 and 90 in the Christian era. Luke only refers to the women till later when they're named, when they're talking to the boys, who, by the way, didn't believe them. They did not believe that they had seen what they had seen. So they all run over together to get there. And they indicate that what had happened was the stone had already rolled back. So the stone was already back. And this time there were two men in dazzling clothes. And they indicated, well, he was here a minute ago, but he's already gone to Galilee. No instruction, no follow him, go there. Hey, he was here a minute ago. He's gone to Galilee because the fish and chips are better. Who knows why? Then we come to the illustrious John. John was written somewhere between 90 and 110 years after the resurrection and after the period of time that Jesus, the man, was on the planet. In John's account, M1 went by herself. She saw that the stone was already removed and there was no one else around. So what she does is instead of, you know, having a poke around herself, she panics and she runs off to tell Peter and an unnamed disciple. We don't know which disciple it was. But whichever disciple it was, he gets there before Peter. And then when Peter gets there, they go inside and they see the linen wrappings lying inside. But so traditionally when someone was buried in those days and put into a tomb, they were buried in cloth all over their body, but then there was a separate cloth for their head. It was a special cloth that was used for their head. And that particular cloth was not lying with the linen wrappings inside, but rolled up in a place by itself. And there was no body indicated anywhere. There was nobody around. There was no body in the thing. There was the linen ones inside the tomb just left. And then this one was rolled up very carefully and done that. So the writer, John, assumes he was here a minute ago. So the challenge, and that's just the resurrection. That's just the people finding him at the tomb. There are many chapters after, quite a few chapters after that. And to be honest with you, I got to those and I went, I'm exhausted. You know, it's trying to work out the dominoes of what went where, when, why, and how. And then I went, oh, thank God I'm at Unity. Because at Unity, I don't have to worry about the pinpoint accuracy of the writers. The writers were written starting, what did we say, 66 years afterwards, anywhere up to 110 years afterwards. Can you write a full detailed account of what you did? Well, some of you can't do it 66 years ago, but some of you might be able to do 66 years ago what you a lot were up to. No, I can't remember last week some days. And I certainly don't write it down like they would have written it in those days. So obviously a lot of this has come from a sort of, you know, writings and an oral history and various other bits and pieces. And that's where I said to myself, thank goodness I'm with Unity, because with Unity I can interpret and look at the all four of those gospels, and I can interpret those based on metaphysics as to what they mean for me. I can't work out what they mean for you. I can't work out what they mean for you, because the circumstances are different for all of us, the same as it was different for the writers who wrote about this. The writers wrote from a point of view of what was important to them at the time they were writing about recounting the events that happened quite a few years, quite a few decades ago. So if I look at understanding it from a Unity perspective, then suddenly the commonality of the stories becomes the same. The commonalities within the story is that it was the fact that Jesus the man was placed in a tomb and a rock was rolled in front of it, a stone was rolled in front of it to keep him there, whether there was guards watching him or not. It was okay. That was the, for me, that's where the human aspect of what I need to let go of is trapped behind a stone wall that I have placed there myself. It's a blockage. So if I look at a situation where circumstances are challenging me, I need to look at, oh, where's the stone? Where's the blockage? Where's what's going on? Where is it? What do I need to look at that I need to roll away? Because remember last or 2 weeks ago when I did my talk about reincarnation and regeneration and reincarnation, I talked about the fact that metaphysically reincarnation is dying to the old and being born anew with new ideas, new concepts, new thoughts, new feelings, new attitudes. And again, I talked about the fact that, you know, in my recovery process, I have had to be born anew on a consistent basis, learning to get rid of the old thinking, the old feelings, the old attitudes to how I operated, and develop and build and create new ones. I've had to do the same with my Unity journey. My Unity journey started out with, I was in an argument with a mate about the Bible, and I suddenly realized I was spouting out stuff that I kind of knew, but I didn't really know, and I wasn't really, I didn't feel as though I was being authentic in the way I communicated with him because I didn't really know. And I thought, well, I want to study the Bible. And thank goodness the universe provided me with Unity and specifically Rhonda to give me a good understanding of how to use the Bible, what the Bible's about, where it came from, the history of it. And I got to understand that. So I had to die to the old way of listening to other things, reading memes, watching YouTube videos that sort of vaguely talked about what the Bible was about, to actually studying it and developing a new system of studying it myself and understanding for myself from my own belief pattern and my own self what that meant. So I had to die with the old way of doing stuff and move into a new way. When I was lovingly guided to being a Unity licensed Unity teacher, thank you, Rhonda, I had to die to, I can't talk about Unity. I can't talk about that stuff. What do I know? I'm only a beginner. We're all just beginners. Whether you've been here 20 years, 30 years, or, you know, even Grace, I was talking to Grace last week and she, you know, She's a beginner in some stuff as well. She says that, you know, I'm a licensed Unity learner is what I am, not a licensed Unity teacher. So I had to die to that concept that I'm not good enough. I had to die to that concept of I'm not capable of teaching or being involved in this stuff. Now, all I teach is what I learn. And I learn better by giving you information and doing it that way. And so I had to die with an old concept. So I had to roll away the stone. The stone for me was I'm not good enough. I knew I could learn stuff. I knew I could teach stuff. I'd been a professional registered teacher, you know, workplace trainer for 16 years. Well, by that stage, 14 years, I've been a trainer. I knew I could train, but this is different. This is different from teaching you how to fill in a resume. It's different from teaching on how to write a cover letter, which is what the stuff I was teaching. This is about what's real for me today that Unity has helped me with that I can present to you guys. It's a very different thing. So I had to die and roll away the blockage that I'm not good enough. I also looked at, you know, other aspects of this, recognizing that the clothes that are left in there, metaphysically, the clothes that are left in one of the recounts is the skin of ego that no longer serves me. So in metaphysics, we talk about individuality and personality. Individuality is the Christ consciousness of who you are. The personality is how that expresses out into the world. But ego can be a negative thing as well, which we know, we talked about people, you know, Skyhooks wrote in the 70s and early 80s that ego is not a dirty word, but there are behaviors and attitudes of diseased egos that may be not helpful to me personally. So it's shedding that personality, that side of myself, and connecting with the individuality of the Christ consciousness of who I am is the important part of the representation of the clothes left in the tomb. I have to leave the personality aside and ascend or reincarnate or resurrect to the spiritual I am, which is what happens next. So I have to understand that looking at the resurrection as a historical point of view doesn't quite work for me, but understanding that I can look at it from a metaphysical point of view. So again, I'll remind you, because I talked about this 2 weeks ago, the metaphysical meaning of resurrection from the metaphysical Bible dictionary, the raising of man's mind and body from sense to spiritual consciousness. This is accomplished by the quickening power of the Holy Spirit. Quote, if the spirit of him that raises up Jesus from the dead dwelleth in you, he that raised up Christ Jesus from the dead shall give life also to your mortal bodies through his spirit that dwelleth within you. So when I go through the resurrection process for myself, when I'm moving from one place to another, I get to say, he was here a minute ago, and I get to move on. I get to go to Galilee. I get to go to the promise of change. I get to go through change to the promise of change. I love the AA saying that many, many people have used over the years is that, you know, when you get sick and tired of getting sick and tired, come see us. You know, and for me, there was a period of time where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was sick of the way I was living, sick of what I was doing. And, you know, going through a cathartic event of any sort, and it can be major, it can be minor. It doesn't have to be these huge things that go on. So for argument's sake, I've got a minor thing going on at the moment where at work, by the end of June, I have to reapply for my current position. Now, old Julian would have gone into a blind panic about, oh, God, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. But because of the processes of where I work, it's a requirement that the expression of interest, which is what I work under at the moment, are reviewed every year to give other people an opportunity to do what I'm doing, because this is actually a growth process and learning to go through it. Now, my old self would have gone, oh, I'm panicking, I don't know anything, I don't know, I won't get my current job back, yada, yada, yada. They'll want somebody else, all of that sort of stuff. And again, guess what? I had to roll back the stone of I'm not good enough. So guess what? I had to do it again at a different level in a different way. Now, the difference is that the first time I had to go through that, trust me, it took me several weeks to months to get through that I'm not good enough to teach Unity subjects. The other day, it took me about 30 minutes to get through it. It's like, no, I've been doing the job. I know I can do the job. I just got to put it down on paper. And I've only got to do it in 400 words. So it's not like I've got to write, you know, an assignment for anybody. I just got to do it and get it done. So it's understanding that we have to look at the blockages. So in those things, in the interpretations that the four gospels had, most of the three of them had somebody, either one or two people there, either two men dressed in white, one man dressed in white, or an angel. And metaphysically, that means the inspiration. It's the spark of knowing. It's the spark of understanding. Angels, as we know, for a lot of people, people interpret angels as messengers in the Bible. Metaphysically, angels are bringers of messages from divine ideas. So if we look at the metaphysics that we teach in Unity, the infinite field of potential and possibility is where everything's possible, but somehow we have to get that message to our conscious mind, and we do that through our processes of bringing and inviting divine mind to present us with information, which we sometimes call intuition, sometimes call it inner knowing, gut feeling, whatever it is for you. But it's the angels that represent that in this particular story, because they're giving them, whether it's the men or whether it's an angel, they're dressed in white, they're light, you know, and light is everywhere present. It's the energy of the oneness. It's the energy of divine mind is giving them a message that they need to build a bridge, get on, move on, because he was here a minute ago, he's not now. That means you were here a minute ago, your new you has moved on. What's really interesting about the Matthew 28:11 is the only writing in this one where, and this is really interesting, the two guards that were out the front ran back to the powers that be, and the powers that be bribed the guards to say that the disciples had taken the body. They wanted to deflect from the potential miracle. And for me, when I looked at that and I thought about that for a while, to me, that's those negative thoughts that sometimes slip in and go, no, you don't really believe that, or you can't do that, or you can't do this. And the bribing of that is from the ego is saying, if you stay where you are, at least you'll be safe and comfortable. Because what happens is they go back to the priests and the elders of Jerusalem, and they say, he's gone, you know, the body's gone. And they say, well, don't tell anybody. We'll bribe you, but we'll tell them that the disciples took the body. So to me, that's about recognizing that change happens, but I can ignore it if I want to, and I can falsify myself into believing that the change didn't really happen. Does that make sense? So you've got to be really careful about, you know, what thoughts, and again, we talk, you know, about being aware of your thoughts and being aware of what's going on in and through and as you. And it's important to sometimes recognize, oh, that's the guards. That's the guards bugging off and being told that everything's okay. So just be aware of that. The Gospels talk about the singular event of resurrection of a singular person who taught that it is possible for all of us. Jesus said, I will do many things. I've done great things, but you will do more, and you'll do more of them, and you'll do greater things than I. Metaphysically, Jesus represents the human aspect of our spiritual nature, and that moving between these supposed divides is not only possible, but occurs in any given moment and in any given dimensions of consciousness. Physiologically, spiritually, and cognitively, we resurrect on a constant basis. Our cells in the body reincarnate and resurrect over a 10-year period. As truth students, we reincarnate and resurrect our consciousness when we decide to change our thoughts, to change our lives. And in our conscious mind, we reincarnate our true self in meditation and through the living from our Christ consciousness in every aspect of our lives. There's an old affirmation or a saying that many of you might have heard is that every day and every way I'm getting better and better, which I change to every day and every way I increase my awareness. Now, it's not catchy, but it's more accurate from my perspective. Through increasing my awareness, I can put into practice the teachings from Jesus and reincarnate and resurrect to a higher plane of consciousness and live my truth in expression. So, what stones do you need to move away to resurrect from where you are or what's going on with you to where you want to be? Do you need to spend time in the tomb, which is the silence, which is the place where you explore what's going on, to then roll back whatever the stone is that's holding you back? Do you need to look within? Connect to the Christ consciousness of who you are. Because that's what he wanted. That's what the Christ conscious wants. That's what divine mind wants. It wants you to grow, to learn, and to be who you truly are. That energy of truth shining and expressing as your personality from your individuality. Knowing and understanding that truth is the journey from the tomb to Galilee. And remember, he was here a minute ago. He's always here, and so it is. Thank you. Let's take some time to really connect to that inner knowing of who we are. So get yourselves into a comfortable position, whatever that is for you. And take a couple of deep breaths. Breathing in through the sense consciousness, breathing out those negative thoughts, those negative feelings. Take a deep breath in, breathing in divine mind, divine consciousness. And breathe out divine love, divine joy. Spread it out into the ether. And imagine yourself standing there in front of a tomb, the large rock placed at the front. And looking at that rock, seeing a shining light next to the rock, and hearing the message, the shining light says, here is your blockage. I will remove that blockage for you. What is blocking you to your good? What is blocking you and keeping you trapped within sense consciousness? Feel that message going to the very soul and very heart of who you are. Feel that through divine love, knowing that its highest good is for you, and that removing that block is a release to the divine of who you are. Then see that divine light moving the stone, rolling it away effortlessly, without pause, moving it out of the way. And seeing that that tomb that you thought you were trapped behind is free and empty, and there is nothing there. It has been cleansed, it is gone. And in that moment, express your gratitude to divine mind, divine ideas, divine consciousness, that one power and that one presence in the universe. Showing gratitude for the ability to remove those blocks as you. For you are the white light. You are the divine. Moving those blockages from your consciousness and ascending to a higher sense of self and to a higher, unique understanding of the individuality of your Christ presence expressing as you. And through this, in silence, we experience the divine love of the here and now. Living, loving spirit, we thank you for the time together, knowing the inner knowing of who we are, knowing that spiritual concept is not a concept, it is a reality of the inner God, the inner spirit of who we are. And we know that through this process, we are able to grow and change and evolve and unfurl the Christ consciousness within. On this precious